Good evening, family. My name is Mike. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
My
sober date's October 1st, 2008. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I sponsor men and women who I expect to sponsor men and women if they're capable. My home group is A Vision for You in Union on Thursday nights, and I'm grateful to be here. Really quickly, I just want to say I always do that I'm no guru. I'm no know-it-all. I'm just here to share my experience with this book, with these steps. And I'm only right because it worked for me. But if it works for you, however you do it, then you're right too. And this is also not to replace you having your own experience with a sponsor. So that being said, I do want to move because we're on week six and we have a lot of reading left to do. I'd like to get through page 88 in A Vision for You. So I've got us on the bottom of page 68. So we're in the middle of the fourth step. And it says, now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there. And, you know, I always like to, again, I'm here to share this with you as if you were my sponsee. Now, let them know that we're not actually talking about the physical action of sex here. I happen to be heterosexual, so we're talking, and if they're heterosexual, then those relationships with the opposite sex. I haven't sponsored anybody who's not heterosexual, so I don't know what that looks like later, but I'll find out. I'll ask somebody who does. But again, we're talking about those type of relationships, for me, with the opposite sex. And but above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off the track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can be done about them? So they're sort of setting us up here for, you know, my experience with this step, and I don't like blanket statements, so I'll say most everybody I deal with, that deepest, darkest secret is usually sex, somewhere around sex. And so this is really setting us up for, we're not here to judge you, you know. There are these extremes, and we don't care where you fall. And we're here to help you find out your truth in your relationships. And yet it's more about the relationships. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? And I stop right there, usually with the sponsee, and I have them write down a list of all the people who they've had relationships with usually. Now, I do say, you know, if a sponsee really believes that there's this one relationship where I did no harm, fine. But most of the time, we write down every relationship we've been in. Because what I found is that I've been dishonest in every relationship. Usually from the beginning with my motives. You know, what I want out of the relationship. I'm not really honest. I'm never an open book. Something I experienced, sidetracking here, but about 3 years ago, I wrote another inventory on this. And what I had come to find out about myself was every woman who I ever found attractive, I had to write down. Because it turns out every woman I had ever found attractive, I never was honest. I never showed my true transparent self. So not just relationships that I was in, but if I found you attractive, I showed you what I wanted to show you. You know, whether or not I actually pursued a relationship, I just wasn't my open, honest, transparent self. And what this allowed me to do, and again, this happened later at about 5 years sober, whatever, five-ish, was this allowed me to have relationships with women that were completely open and honest and transparent with no agendas, no motives. You know, to stop objectifying women and to treat women as equal as I can. Equal, yes, the same, no. That makes sense, because we are equal. But what I have learned through sponsoring women is that I do have to treat women a little differently. And anybody's interested in that, please come talk to me. I'm known for making people uncomfortable. If you're a newcomer and you say in a meeting, I think, I'll come up to you after a meeting and say, maybe you need to stop thinking. And if you're a guy, I'll come talk to you the next time and the next time. With a woman, I don't really approach them that second time. I let it rock for a while. Because I know a lot of women have already been dominated and oppressed by men. And I just don't want to feed any fear. I'll make you uncomfortable, then I'll walk away and let it be. So I don't know if that makes sense. This is one of the ways that I do treat women differently, but not unequal. I go on my tangents. So again, we're writing down a list of the relationships that I've been in. And here's something I do. And you call it what you want. I'm not about shortcuts. I'm about efficiency in this process. I do the harms list the same exact way. And I actually let my sponsees go ahead and they can do the first column of both lists now if they want. Harms and sex. And for me, and please share with me if you see it, because I don't really see a huge separation in instructions for actual harms, not of the sexual nature, not of the relationship nature, but I go about, because I'm going to need a list in my eighth step. So I do like them, though, to call it two separate things. There's a harms list and a relationships list, because what I like to do is think that I didn't cause harm in relationships. So I write every relationship, and then what I find is I was always dishonest. And that's harmful whether or not they see it or feel harmed. It's a dishonesty on my part. And it's a harm done to somebody if I haven't been true and honest. Especially if I've ended up in a relationship with them. So these two lists for me, again, are done the same way. But they are separate lists, because again, I need to look at relationships that I've had with the opposite sex. So again, whom did we hurt? And I usually write this in the left hand, just on the pink column, on a regular piece of binder paper. That's about how much space I need. Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? And actually, what is the harm, too, would be the second column. I don't know why I didn't say that already. So again, it would be who. Second column would be what is the harm. And I like to do, again, cliff notes with this. Keep it to 8 to 12 words. Leave out the's and ands, you know. In honor of efficiency, we'll talk about the whole story and we'll really dig deep into it. And on the flip side of that, it is important to get this stuff out on, you know, there's something that happens when I put a pen to paper for me. There's something happens to me that it finally becomes real. You know, I like to act like things aren't real. I like to stuff things so far back that I think God doesn't know, or that if I don't actually admit it, it never happened. You know? And so now we've got the who and the what. And in the third column, looking at, and I leave out the word unjustifiably. I just look at, did I arouse suspicion, bitterness, or jealousy? Because for me, and this isn't for everybody, and anybody who has different experience, fantastic, I was never victimized in a relationship. So there is no justifiable suspicion, bitterness, or jealousy that I caused. For me. And each person is different. You know, you may believe you justifiably caused one of these things, and you may have been harmed and victimized. And now we talk about justifiable anger, something I don't have room for. But there can be a reason that I do things. And excuses, but a reason. I don't know if that made any sense, the differentiation. Okay, so that's my third column, and I do this real simple. I have them write SBJ. Suspicion, bitterness, or jealousy. A lot of people actually have a lot more writing than that, and that's fine. That's fantastic. I'm not going to go back and talk about why I do the process the way I do it. Go back and listen to the first couple weeks. Mark will take care of that. But I'm about efficiency. I'm about getting people off the ledge, and let's get through 9 so we can start living in 10, 11, and 12. And then so the last column is, where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. Again, this last column, I don't want novels, but it does take a little more. And you know, I had this sponsee, this woman, a little while back, and she decided to go to another fellowship, and it's fantastic. It's working for her, I think. But she had this awareness of what we were writing in this column that blew my mind. I've never had a newcomer like have that awareness. Usually it's like, I stole. Like, so again, going to harms. Like, what is the harm? I stole. What should I have done differently? Not stole. That's not really what we're looking for here. We're looking to dig a little deeper than that. You know, and the example I like to use is like my mother. Like, okay, so you stole. But I didn't just steal money from my mother. You know, what I stole from my mother is infinite. You know, I stole smiles. I stole night's sleep. I stole peace of mind. So it's not about the physical stuff. I need to dig a little deeper. I actually forgot my four step last week. I call this my book of spells. You know, the witch's closest guarded secret. So I look at things like, you know, I should have been okay. So I mentioned my mom. What should I have done differently? Right. So where was I at fault? I robbed my mom of any peace, any sleep. So what should I have done differently? I should have been kind. I should have been compassionate. I should have been honest is the obvious. And then, you know, when we're talking about relationships, I cheated. What should I have done differently? Not cheated? No, there's a little more to it than that. I should have been faithful. You know, I should have been honest. You know, or I should have never got into the relationship knowing that I couldn't be if I couldn't be. So this is, again, where were we at fault? What should we have done differently? We're digging a little deeper than just the opposite of what I did. And should have forgiven. I'm just randomly going down. You know, the games I played with people. Mm. Dishonesty. And I got a guy on here. There was a guy at a job, a bouncer, and we were friends. And the harm I did to him is I was a total jerk. I'd get all wasted, and you know, he'd tell me I got to go, and I was just a complete a-hole to him. So where was I at fault, and what should I have done differently? It isn't just I should have been nice. You know, I should have respected what he was trying to do. You know, I should have appreciated that the guy had a job to do. And so again, we're talking a little dig deeper. And you don't have to write all those words. I have should have respected. You know, should have, sort of efficient. So we got this all down paper and we looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. And I do sex ideals, but I do them after we get to the 12 steps. I recommend to my sponsees no relationships in the first 88 pages. I don't get caught up in the year thing. I know people with 20 years who am I to say, but don't appear to be in any kind of condition or have much to offer in a relationship. What do I know? I know that's a judgment, and I'm not really passing that judgment. I'm just saying. And then I've seen people with 6 months recovery who really know who they are, what they're looking for. They have a lot to offer and maybe could be in a successful relationship. So no relationships in the first 88 pages. And when we get to page 88, we do a sex ideal. We still got to do that.
We did it.
We did do it. That's right. We did
do it.
So the other thing is, you know, I came in married, and I got why I shouldn't be in a relationship. Aside from I don't really bring anything to a relationship as a newcomer. I don't really offer anything. But I was sick. And I'm trying to find out who I am and deal with my inner workings. And to take on a whole other person's personality was way too much for me. To be patient and loving and kind and tolerant. Again, as a newcomer, I'll step forward. So if we have time towards the end, I'll talk about how we go through that ideal. But basically, we're trying to be successful in future relationships. We want to have ideals that we're going to live towards, that we're going to work towards. And it starts for me with knowing what I want and asking myself, can I bring and offer the same thing that I want? I am going to go on a little bit of a tangent here. One of the things that I experienced with this is especially you see this in newcomers. Like, let's just say you had an ideal and there's 53 things on there. I'll sell myself short on 52 of them because I really like one. You know, there's like 53 things that I'm looking for in that woman. I'm one who wanted to be married and have kids, and you may not be, but that's one I wanted. So why am I willing to sell myself short on 52 of those ideals? Because one's really good. And it's easier to do when I have that on paper and I've looked at it and got honest about it and started to be aware. You know, and it's funny how men and women do operate differently here. Guys will just sell themselves out on one or two ideals. And not a blanket statement, but often some of the women I've worked with often expect all 53. Does that make sense? Sometimes they'll expect all 53. So I need to understand myself, man or woman, what I'm looking for, what I want to grow towards, and where I'm willing to find balance. You know, somebody with all 53 is probably God. You know? And that's okay. I need to understand that, except, you know, and stop conceding on the stuff that's really important. Tangent. We subjected each relationship to this test. Was it selfish or not? For me, every single one was. And it's funny how I remember things differently, and I go about making amends, and I'm like, in my head, I'm like, she shouldn't have cheated on me, and she remembers that I cheated on her. I don't have room to argue that, because honestly, my memory is not that good. Like, I have to trust the same person before myself. And anyways, it just doesn't matter. It really just doesn't matter. I'm going to own up to whatever you think I did, because I got away with a whole bunch of stuff. We ask God to mold our ideals and help us live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. And this, I find, is important to talk about because, again, whatever your sex ideals are, whatever stuff you like is okay. If at the end of the day you're okay, then it's okay. I do a lot of meetings. I was doing meetings in my basement with guys in my lineage for a while. And every week, it was like a dig deep 10-step review. And every week sex comes up, sex and porn and sex and porn. And here's the deal. My wife thinks porn is the same as cheating. I absolutely do not agree with her. Like, it's a fundamental thing for me. But in her soul, she believes it is the same as cheating. Who do you think should give on that?
You should.
Right.
If you know what's
absolutely. Well, it's not only that. It's just I put the shoe on the other foot. If I felt like I was being cheated on and you thought it was okay, so can I give that up? Have I 100%? No, but I've worked on it. I'm here to be honest. And so, yet I know guys who can watch porn and they don't get that dark feeling that I get. So what I'm driving at is whatever it is I'm doing is only wrong because somewhere in my soul between me and God it feels wrong. And that same thing may be okay for you. You don't get that dark feeling. And they're really hitting this home with, we don't get to be the arbiter of people's sex conduct. And I see this stuff in here. You know, I know a guy, and I don't want to get too much into this situation, and I certainly don't want to break the name, but we're at a meeting for a while, and he befriends and is honest with women the same as me. Something happened. Guy's got 20-something years. He's in his 50s. Girl's 20. And a newcomer, and he said something to her that she didn't like. They got in a huge argument about it, ended up cursing each other out in a meeting and texting, and she opened her mouth on what was going on in the text. Everybody assumed that what this guy did was of the sexual nature. Everybody. He was ostracized. He was treated like a piece of crap. He came to myself and a friend, Ian, to take him through 4 and 5 on this. And we did, and I had to go to the girl because she was a friend of mine, because I had to find out for him if he was telling me the truth. And I said, was this of the sexual nature? And he said, no, it was worse. She said, no, it was worse. I don't know what that meant, but that stopped the point where it's my business. And so we don't always know what we think we know. I see things, and I know all the facts. This is the only way it could have gone until I hear how it really went. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess it could have went that way too. And even so, like, I got a big issue with, you know, 13th stepping. But does that person deserve to die and be ostracized in Alcoholics Anonymous? Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's not my job to judge. But what I did was I ran to that dude's aid because I knew everybody was going to run to her. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to see him get better. So whatever it was didn't happen again. And, you know, we see this a lot with gossip. Somebody does something. You're going to see me do stuff wrong. You stick around. But please don't believe everything you hear. And honestly, with these alcoholic guys, I believe only half of what I see, you know. But we don't get to judge people. We don't know what the relationship between them and God is like. You know, my values don't have to be their values, whether it's in here or out there. Soapbox, sorry. Whatever ideals turned out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. I must be willing to grow towards that ideal. I spent time with me and God in this process. You know, I've shaped some sound ideals, and that's what God wants for me. And I got to be willing to grow towards that. If I keep doing the stuff that I want to do that's not good for me, that gives me that dark spot, I start holding secrets, and I start lying, and I start getting sick, and I know what this is like. It's very dark. I've gotten lucky a few times in Alcoholics Anonymous that I haven't drank. I've done just about everything you can imagine without picking up a drink in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I'm really lucky at 4 years, at 5 years, really at 2 years, too. In with a bookie again, and I can gamble today. I can gamble today, but when I'm not in a good spot and I'm being dishonest about how I'm doing it, and I'm telling my wife I'm only spending $200 and I'm $1,000 in, you know. So whatever it is, I've got to have an ideal with God, and I've got to be willing to grow towards that. I don't get shortcuts. I don't get a lot of the things that I want today. It's just the trade-off for not living that miserable life. For me. For me, for me, always for me. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. We'll talk more about that when we get to 9, but I've got to be willing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. If we want it. And I remember going through a long time where I wouldn't pray lust away. Because God might actually take it if I really am willing. And I have moments still. I'm here to be honest with you guys. You know, like, I still have moments where I don't want to pray lust away. I like to hold on to that. And I'll talk in 6 and 7 about when I, like, after I told you guys about this marathon I did over 3 days. It was my 4th and 5th step. And I get on my knees for step 7, and I'm like gung-ho. I'm ready to have God remove everything. And something in the back of my head goes, but I want to hang on to that. Mm-hmm. But I like that. And lust is one of them. And this desire for money is another one. So again, if I'm willing, God also learns how to use our character defects for us. You know, he learns how to change things. I've learned how to use my ego a little bit, you know, my way with speaking. I've learned how to use that in a positive way. But I need to invite God in to do it, otherwise it's just simply ego. So, but again, the right answer will come if we want it. And I don't always want the right answer. I don't always want the right answer. I don't always want God to take away from me what I know God needs to take away from me. Because I can't let it go. I can't. And sometimes I just got to say, God, help me be willing to someday let this go. And that's my progress. God alone can judge our sex situation. Okay? So this tells you as a newcomer, I'm not going to judge you. And I've already dropped my dark stuff on you. And I do have the 6 sex secret. You know? I do. And I've already let that go. I've already let my deepest, darkest stuff go to a sponsee at this point. But this is also an instruction for me. I don't get to judge your sex conduct. My job is to see alcoholics get better. And if you fail and you fall short and you do something horrendous, you're one of God's children and you deserve to get better. You know, I've never sponsored people who've done certain things that I think are the most horrible things you can do. But again, about 2 years ago, I went through a lot of prayer and meditation. Would I be willing? Would I be able? And the answer is yes. I could sponsor somebody who's done anything on this planet. And maybe my role in this life is some harm reduction. And maybe those things don't continue to happen because God allowed me to help that person. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't care what you've done. And I've heard and I've sponsored some people who've done some stuff. And I've done my own stuff. And stuff happened to them. And none of it matters. It just doesn't matter. We're all equal in here. We're all children of God. And we're trying to get better. Counsel with persons is often desirable. But we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. I never give advice on anything. I share my experience. My advice is like my projected thinking. And it doesn't go well. The way I project things to go, if it's not my direct experience, I say, I don't know. And it's one of the most powerful things I can say to a sponsee or to a newcomer. I don't know. But let's find out together. Suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and stumble. I love this part of the book. We forget about this and we beat ourselves to crap. Does this mean we're going to get drunk? They're about to tell me there's no unforgivable defense in here. There's nothing you can do sober, you know, or sick and suffering without a drink that's unforgivable, that you can't get back on track. There's nothing. And trust me, I know because I've done most of it. Some people tell us so. But this is only a half-truth. It depends on us and our motives. If we are sorry for what we have done and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe that we will be forgiven and have learned our lesson. If we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. We are not theorizing. These are facts out of our experience. And I dealt with this at 2 years and 4 years and 5 years. 4 years was probably the worst one. I'm up to some stuff in AA, and it's not good. And it starts with not practicing 10 and 11 for 2 days. And once I get to that 2-day mark, I'm not doing it for like 6 months. And I think I'm all right. And I'm telling myself, when I'm ready to get back on track, I'll get back on track. That's a scary thing for an alcoholic. I'm in control again. I'm driving blind for a while. And next thing you know, it's compounding, and it's a whole bunch of little stuff building up. And before you know it, like I said, I'm up to some stuff, and I'm into some shit. Excuse my language. And I'm so terrified to tell my sponsor, because at 4 years I should know better, right? I hold the problem to a higher standard now. Like, I've been doing this. Like, it was me who's been driving. And it's really scary. And I tell you, the minute I get honest with my sponsor, it was nothing like his reaction the first time he heard my four step. He said to me, of course this is what you do. Like, first shut the hell up with the, I hold myself to a higher standard, but I can't believe I'm doing this again. He's like, of course you're doing that. And you're lucky you didn't drink. But if you're not relying on God, and you're not going to the power, then you're going to what you want. And what you want is the stuff that kills you. So again, if you're there, or you get there, or if you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. There's nothing you can do in here that you can't come back from and stay sober. Nothing. Nothing. It tells me right here, if you're sorry, you knock it off and make right the harm you've done. But if you keep it up, we go back to the first step, right? So to sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others, right? That's always my answer. When I'm really struggling, and it's not one of those been going on for a while, but 3 or 4 days I'm in a funk. My old sponsor was really the best at this, and he'd ask me. He had these checkpoint steps he'd go to. Where are you at with 10 and 11? Okay, 10 and 11's good. Where are you at with 9? Okay, 9's good. Did you leave something out in 4? Did you not get rid of it in 5? And then we go to 6. What am I fighting? What is it I'm fighting? There's something I'm fighting. There's something I really like. There's something I don't want to let go of. And at the end of the... Oh, and 12. 12 is somewhere back after 10, 11. He asked me who I'm helping. But when I get really blocked off from God, and I've hit these walls too, where I'm doing everything that I was doing like 2 months ago. It all looks exactly like it did 2 months ago. And I'm just not connecting to power. I'm usually not helping somebody. I'm usually not helping somebody in a strenuous way, sitting down face to face, dig deep, stuff that I don't want to do, picking them up from detox, you know, helping them move, that kind of stuff. That's what's going to bail me out every time. I tell my sponsees, like, you know, you got 2 months and we're on like step 6 or 7, and I hear a newcomer comes in here and they're struggling. I say, go get that one. That's the one that's going to keep you sober. Whether or not you sponsor them, you know. Get on the phone with this person. Sometimes just calling somebody to say hi gets me out of what I need. Just calling somebody to say hi is the help I need. And they think I'm helping them. So again, it's very troublesome. We throw ourselves harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. We work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. And I know my track record shows me over and over and over, if I give in to that thing that I want to do that I know I shouldn't, it ends up in heartache, pain. If we have been thorough about our personal inventory, we have written down a lot. And I always ask at this point, have you been thorough? We have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have begun to comprehend their futility and fatality. Woo! Deadly. We have commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men. I was just reading Fourth Column of Resentments with somebody tonight. And we already start to see that in that awakening. You know, and then again in Harms, what should I have done differently? But specifically in that Resentments, in that Fourth Column of Resentments, or whatever you call it, I start to get free. I start to see how my intolerance, my judgmental, my unreasonable expectations, I'm able to stop in the middle of something where I'm about to get really angry and be like, you know what? What that dude did to me, I've done to people 100 times. Mm. You know, I'm starting to see the truth about this. And I've begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men and women. Even our enemies, for we look on them as sick people. And we talked a little bit about this in the shares last week. For me, when the book does say there are others who are sick, I'm not out here judging or like saying that one is sick. And it's not a look on like a negative thing. It's I really try and look at like the guy in Starbucks in line in front of me who's treating everybody like crap. He's clearly in a hurry and he thinks we're all there to serve him. I look on him as I would one who's in bed, dying of a deadly illness. You know, that person said like a couple jerky things to me. Would I let him go? Or would I just get really angry and lay into this person? No, I'd let it go. And I'd say, you know what, maybe that person in Starbucks in front of me, maybe they got some kind of spiritual illness. Maybe, I don't know. But I know what that's like, and it really sucks. I really wish they had the way out that I had. You know, I'm not going to sit here and be angry and start calling douches and jerk-offs and all this and that. I'm sorry, my language is not appropriate today. I apologize. Tighten it up. No, really, I'm going to tighten it up. We have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct, and we are willing to straighten out the past if we can. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. And hopefully you see that. Again, there's been a lot of self-searching going on in the fourth step. Like, you really should have a big, solid chunk of truth about yourself at this point. If you've already made a decision, third step, and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, fourth step, you've made a good beginning. A beginning.
Another beginning.
That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. I love how this it keeps saying, now more action, now more action. You've made a beginning. Well, this is a life process, and it is a beginning. Page 72. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude and a new relationship with our Creator and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects, right? I've been instructed on how to find out what these defects are. And I've looked at them. I've gotten really honest. And what they're really setting us up for is there's a lot I can't see without someone else to mirror me. You know, this is what the fifth step is I really start to see the patterns. And I needed a sponsor who wasn't going to let me justify anymore. And was my sponsor, and we'll talk more as we actually dig into five, my sponsor said things to me, and he said, like, say it about yourself in the darkest possible way you can. Like, really own it in a dark way. Embrace it so you can let it go. Because if there's still some part of it that you're justifying or think you're okay with, it's going to haunt you later. You know, the more I own it, the more I can let go of it. And going into this fifth step, we're also about to walk through this archway that we've talked about building. Now, I've got all this stuff here. I've got all the baggage written down on the fourth step. I've got everything that's been killing me in my life written down right here. This is my alcoholism. This is my alcoholism. This is my problem. How I operate my entire life without access to a power greater than myself. And I'm going to walk through this arch. I've got an opportunity to recreate my life, to start fresh, to be a new person. And the only thing I bring through that arch is what I bring through the arch. If I leave all this behind, I don't have to be any of it. And if I can trust God, and again, we're talking about a leap. You know, hopefully the chute's been packed. But what do I have to lose? By walking through this arch, willing to leave all this crap behind, if it doesn't work, I can always have the misery back, right? I can always pick it back up. But I need to have everything out. I need to have let go of everything. I need to at least have shared everything on here and then with my sponsor. And that thing that I don't share was the thing that I was trying to get to that I'm carrying through the arch and I didn't do anything. I might as well have done zero. If I, you know, I can write down 2,000 pages in here and I got one person that I'm not willing to talk about. It's going to kill me. Now, it's not about forgetting something. The stuff that I forget, for me, isn't always that powerful. Powerful stuff comes up later. You know, I wasn't even aware of certain patterns that I find out years later. But at this point, have I put down everything? There's everything on there. And one of the other things I meant to say earlier, as we're starting out the fourth step, I always tell my sponsees, you don't have to do the fifth step. You got to do four. That's where you are. You know, and I've learned how to do this myself, having written four steps later because my life depended on it and I didn't even realize it. But I get caught up in five and nine. And I really have learned how to trick myself in my head. You don't have to do five and nine. You have to do four. And the thing that happens with doing four is somewhere in doing this, and specifically when I dig into the fears, it opens the key to willingness. And it starts to lose power. You know, once I get it on paper, it's like I'm just going to share it because I already know that if I don't. So trick yourself. Just write it. I never look at my sponsee's fifth step. My sponsor never looked at mine. You know, it's up to you. It's your freedom if you don't share it. You know what I mean? But again, when you're going into writing this, all your deep, dark secrets, this is your book. I'm not digging in there. This is your thing. This is your business. Now these are about to be cast out. Oh, yeah, okay, wait. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. And I feel like I've got a pretty exact... No, in a rough way. It's not exact yet. We have to put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. The exact nature. And this is where I was told we're going to shine a light on all those dark crevices. And again, that by really owning the darkness that I've been in, this is when I start to get free. The exact nature of my wrong. Here's an example. And this was like my big, deep, dark, secret sex thing. And I'm going to share it here. When I was like 11, my first sexual relations was with my aunt. And I like to like leave it there and just let it like it's justified right there. It doesn't sound so bad until I tell you that my aunt is 3 years younger than me. You know, but I don't want to share that. I don't want to get honest with her. I don't even want to get honest with her with that. I have lied to her whole life and done my best to convince her that that did not happen. And my mom is convinced that it didn't happen. And my mom has called her a liar. You know? And this is what I do. I need to get to the exact nature. I need to talk about the real truth behind stuff. Not just events. I need to talk about my real part in stuff. And you can judge me if you want on it. I've 75 people or so before this, and now we're about 110. And it is what it is. It's not who I am today. But, yeah. My sponsor always said, just let it all out. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough in admitting these to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. My brain does not see the truth about my brain. It doesn't. My brain sees what it wants to see. Even now, and I'm going to find this out in five, even in like a really honest attempt to do it, I still don't fully see the truth until somebody from the outside points out to me. And to this day, many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We'll be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do it, why we should do so. Good reason being I'm going to die if I don't. The best reason first, if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. And there's that word vital. And I've talked about it before. The word vital means necessary for life. I can miss over that word and just treat it like, oh, it says it's kind of important. It says it's necessary for life for me, vital. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Nearly every time. I don't know what happened the other times. My experience is when we leave stuff out, we drink. It's the thing we were trying to get. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on some of the worst items in stock. And it's easy to convince myself of that. Again, when I've done all this writing and I've shared all this but one thing, it's easy to convince myself that one thing isn't going to kill me. But again, I'm dealing with something that's beyond my comprehension, and I'm looking for a solution that's beyond my comprehension. I need to do things that don't make any sense to me. I need to let it all go. That one thing was probably the thing I was trying to get to. There's probably more than that one thing. You know. But again, hopefully at this point you've got a relationship with your sponsor that you trust them. You know, I give my sponsors enough to, you know, they could probably wreck my marriage and send me to jail and all kinds of good stuff. And it just, I'm not afraid of that stuff anymore. It doesn't own me. We think the reason is they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. I just read that. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. And that's sort of fear by definition, right? I'm not going to share it with you. What will you think? My biggest fear, you. They only thought they had humbled themselves. But they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. Oh, God. He is much the actor, very much the actor, and this happens today. I like to present the one I want you to see. You know, it's funny, shouldn't we be on our worst behavior in AA? Right? So that we can tell each other the truth. Like, shouldn't I be on my worst behavior in here? So that you who I trust to tell me the truth, hopefully lovingly and kindly, you know, so that we can be like a rock tumbler and bump into each other and smooth each other out. And then you have to forgive me if you're working a really good program. You have no choice but to forgive me if you're working a good program. Shouldn't I be on my worst behavior in here? But I like to be on my best behavior in here, so you all think I'm great. And I'd be a jerk to the people out there that I'll never see again. You know? I'm an actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. And I've been to this spot too. My sponsor, when I'd sound really good, he'd be like, "Dang, you sounded really good tonight. What are you up to?" You know? Because my ego really knows how to do that. My ego knows how to protect and look good today. And, you know, thank God for people in my life who are willing to tell me the truth. Thank God for people. I had my sponsor in Queens. And there's a few people, and when I stand in front of, there's a girl, Laura, you may know her in the area, she's sober a long time, she does like yoga stuff, teaches yoga, and she just got married to Chris about a year ago. Mm-hmm. I see her walking to a meeting, this is a couple months ago, and I go, "There's Lori, I really want to say hi to her." And then I go, "Oh crap, you better make sure your crap is tight. Because she's going to see right through you." You know? And I need those people in my life. I need a sponsor who's highly unimpressed with me. You know? I do. I need a sponsor who's not impressed with me at all. I had a temporary sponsor, and at one point he had said to me, "I'm really impressed with the way you work your sixth step." And that was a red flag for me. I had just, that's a word that I can't have from a sponsor, impressed. It was one of the reasons he didn't become my permanent sponsor. There were certain areas of my program that he was impressed with, and I don't need that. I need a guy who's going to tell me the truth, and not be a jerk, but tell me the truth. And this is what I need you guys to do. I need to give you guys spiritual license. And I need to listen to what you tell me. Because hopefully, usually, you're not out to hurt me. You know, hopefully we're all here to help each other grow. And this is all stuff that I strive for. I fall short. But listen, I'm not afraid to tell you the truth. You know, if you're acting like a jerk, I'm not afraid to tell you that. Please don't think that I think you're a jerk. I want to see you get better. You know, it's because I care enough. You know, if I hear, like, somebody comes up to me, I had a sponsee come up to me and say, "So-and-so and so-and-so asked me why you blank, blank, blank." And I said, what you should have said to them is, "Why do you not care enough about Mike to go ask him yourself? Why do you not care enough about him? Does he deserve to die?" Right? Because if I keep up certain behaviors, I'm going to die. I'm going to drink and die. So why do we not care enough about each other to tell each other when we're concerned that you might be misbehaving? And, you know, and the other side of that is because I don't hear it well. You know, I'll tell you to F off, and then tomorrow I'll come and apologize and thank you for caring enough about me. He wants to enjoy, okay, the inconsistency. So again, he wants to enjoy this reputation, and his heart knows he doesn't deserve it. And this is that morbid reflection. You know, I like to beat myself up. I like to judge myself on my thoughts. I'm having really dark thoughts. I want to do this, this, and this, but I'm not. And yes, I don't want to have the thoughts, but I'm judging myself as if I'm doing what I'm thinking. You know, I deal with guys who still have very dark thinking. You know, they're working this program hard, and there's still the thinking is very dark, and that gets better. You know, give it time. But judging myself and beating myself in my head doesn't do anything. The only thing that does anything for me is changing. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. This happened to me sober. Not drinking. Other episodes. I go on sprees, man. Shopping. Shopping treats alcoholism like a mother. Shopping treats alcoholism for me, you know, when I'm not praying and meditating and I'm in a dark place and and I can lie and get some money, and I go shopping, and then all of a sudden I come to, and not only do I have like one thing that I got to get honest about, it's this whole spree, and it's just like the old drinking, and I don't want to get honest about it. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. Anybody relate to that? As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. That makes for more drinking. Psychologists are inclined to agree with us. We have spent thousands of dollars for examinations. We know but few instances where we have given these doctors a fair break. We have seldom told them the whole truth, nor have we followed their advice. Right? I never met a psychologist who could help me. I never met a psychologist I was honest with. Ever. I never told a psychologist that I had more than a few drinks. Ever. I never told anybody how much I drank. I never told anybody the truth about my dark thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, about my lustful nature. You know, I never told anybody about this absolute maddening desire for money. And to spend it ridiculously on crap. Unwilling to be honest with these sympathetic men, we were honest with no one else. Why would I? Why would I be honest with anybody else if I can't get honest with a doctor? Small wonder many in the medical profession have a low opinion of alcoholics and their chances of recovery. We must be entirely honest with somebody if we expect to live long or happily in this world. Rightly and naturally, we think well before we choose the person or persons with whom to take this intimate and confidential step. Those of us belonging to a religious denomination which requires confession must and, of course, will want to go to the properly appointed authority whose duty it is to receive it. Though we have no religious connection, we may still do well to talk with some ordained by an established religion. We often find such a person quick to see and understand our problem. Of course, we sometimes encounter people who do not understand alcoholics. Again, you know, I suggest you do this with your sponsor, who understands the how and why you're doing it. And when this book was written, there was like a lot of times they were sending this book out in the mail, and it wasn't somebody to take you through these steps. It was done through mail. I don't know if they did it through the phone. I mean, I guess there was phones in the 30s, right? But they had questions like how to, like, this four-step, like, without somebody guiding me through it. Sorry, I don't know. I don't know. I'm a 70s baby. But, yeah, I lost my train of thought there. But anyways, so this was done in the mail, and there wasn't always somebody to take you through and hear it. So you went to somebody you trusted, you know, and if you were religious, you know, I guess preachers can't share. Yeah, I'm going to wrap up here. I'm going to just blast through the last part of this fifth step next week, because I want to move into six and seven next week. But basically what my sponsor did as we went through this list, as I read it to him, he listed character defects in it. And, you know, it was stuff like... there's stuff I don't want to talk about. Intolerance, judgmental, unreasonable expectations, etc., etc., etc. And in my fears, he wrote down about five core fears. And when we were done, he read this list back to me. And he used past tense words. Because again, I'm emerging through this arch. So everything that was in that list is what I was or used to be. And he said to me, "You have a history of being or have frequently been dishonest. You have a history of being, or you have frequently been intolerant, hypocrite, judgmental, etc., etc." And he read these to me. And I didn't get to respond. I didn't need to. Like, I saw the pattern over and over and over. Hypocrite, 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 hypocrite. Over and over and over. How I placed unreasonable expectations on people. Over and over and over and over. And he handed me this list. And he said, "These are your character defects as I see them. You know, and my fears as he saw them, and did I have anything to add to it?" So we'll wrap up there. And we'll keep moving next week. Did the basket go?
Yeah.